Log Talk Radio.
Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking, Chris, shrinking. Nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking. Honorary degrees from Lincoln. I cross borders like Yoshikas and do albums in a weekend. I'm hip hop speaking, never the weakling. I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all seeking? Them lies and them liars, I still make flyers. I still ride bands and say MC for hire. I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face. Then you got them rappers with that cold broke face. They torn around the world, then they going no place. My KRS One moves at its own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual. But they want to remain respectable. Stop frying.
Do you think
they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking me, I say impeccable, running circles around these intellectuals. What a spectacle. They get mad when I say I and God are identical. You better get on your knees and praise them. These conspiracy theory rappers, I'll blaze them too. Ooh, deja vu. You seen this all before me, slaying your crew. I'm known by all the kids. I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did. People don't stop calling Chris for gigs. Cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid. Me getting bullshit. I can't even count all the dough this month I did. From coast to coast, we roasting toast. I'm hot. Me and the ice can't get close.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? There'll be many of you now. Do you really think they're ready for you now? Real revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This is the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame. But the airwaves is a shame. And the public don't know who to blame. So they blame rappers like we are insane. Like we are to blame for society's pain. Like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame. But we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. The Jazz Cafe is one of the main distributors of the Organo Gold Coffee. It gives natural energy delivered right to your doorstep. If you want to order your coffee today, contact Shauna at 601-918-2079 or go to 601jazzcafe.organogold.com. Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe.
Talk about that much penalty, but that's
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, girl, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Every voice and say, till it in heaven, ring with the harmony. Oh, let it be. Let our rejoicing rise high. South as the North Sea.
Thank you. Happy Monday, everybody. You're now rocking with the Underground. That's Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio. Now, we're not underground because we're lower level with the devil. We're just under the ground off the radar. Just letting y'all know that. We don't go too far. And on New Music Thursday, we make everybody superstars. Like my man Ed Gardner said this weekend, if you have to believe in something, why not believe in me? Let's come out here and get these people to work. It was a successful march that happened Sunday on Western. We talked about it earlier on the program. I'm going to try to get somebody on to talk about it, what happened. And we're going to read a little commentary on that. We're also going to probably have Sister Tara Stamps on to discuss the actions that the Black Caucus has taken and maybe talk about the significance of the vote that they'll be casting tomorrow in lieu of the contract. We got Fat on Top. Jonathan Jackson is in the news. Excuse me, Yusuf Jackson is in the news. They got him for trying to shake the city down some TIF money. We're going to talk about that. And anything else you want to talk about. We got Desert Storm in Cleveland on the internet surfing, checking us out. What's up, Dizzy? How you feel there? We got a whole lot to do. The call-in numbers are JLRN. That's JLearn. JLRN. This is 347-838-9825 is the number to call in. Yes, this is Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio Network, and I will be back after this commercial break. Yes, it's for the people.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as $20 a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
347-838-9825, those are numbers. There was a nice little movement that took place, that took place this weekend. Ed Gardner called for 10,000 men to come out. Over half, a little bit under half showed up when the man made the call. Now, a lot of people here are asking, what was the march all about? Why were you marching? What was the symbolicness of the march for Ed Gardner to just take this walk up and down the block? What was it saying? What was it meaning? Well, it meant a lot. What people are not addressing is funny. At that march, most of those Democratic candidates, a lot of congressional candidates was out there, a lot of state reps, people running for county office, and they're out there. But the funny part about the whole deal to me was that here you got in Obama administration, you got the main constituency that voted for him overwhelmingly picketing in the streets about lack of employment. Here in Chicago, we have Rahm Emanuel, his chief of staff. We have Rahm Emanuel's chief of staff here. And he, as all Democrats should know, that more Democrats in urban areas are elected by African Americans. So he should also understand the plight of black economics. But the funny part about it was, the aldermen and the state reps and the congressmen who allow for these contracts to go out, they know who's getting the contracts. They can stop it right there and hold back funds. I was told that if there's no minorities in the contract, you get fined. And so some contracts write that into the overall cost of just doing business with the city. But that's what's really going on. We also want to have my girl Tara Stamps on to talk about a little Black Caucus, their little movements that they're going to be making. Probably a little chime in on the teacher's contract also. Right now, I'm going to kick it to my sister Ebony. She got to go read a little column on Mary Mitchell. We also want to do a Yusuf Jackson beer distribution part also that he's caught up in. And then there's someone also who has a book dealing with Jesse Jackson Jr. saying he can probably get Rob Blagojevich a pardon because he and the president are cool. Ready, Ebony? Oh, here we go.
Here you go. This is from Mary Mitchell's Sun-Times columnist, update October 1st, 2012. It's called Community Answers Ed Gardner's Call to Action. On Sunday afternoon, nearly 1,000 people, practically all of them African American, answered Ed Gardner's call to rally at 95th and Western to protest the continued lack of black workers on construction sites in Chicago. Gardner, 87, founder of the iconic Soft Sheen hair products, and the man credited with bankrolling the election of Harold Washington, the city's first mayor, was joined by a cadre of civil rights and community leaders. They included activist Webb Evans, former Senator Roland Burris, Representative Danny Davis, Democrat from Chicago, Bobby L. Rush, Democrat from Chicago, and Cook County Clerk Dorothy Brown. Other marchers represented a cross-section of Chicago's business and political leaders. They were young and old, teachers and parents, churchgoers and hell-raisers, politicians and their bashers, marching alongside the well-to-doers and those not doing so well. Protesters converged in both directions on Western. at times spilling out into the streets and stopping traffic between 95th and 91st and Western, chanting, "If we don't work, no one works." One protester waved a handmade sign that said, "Jobs, not jails." It's important to shine a light on the fact that we need to have jobs in our community, said John Rogers, Jr., chairman and CEO of Area Capital Management, as he marched discreetly among the protesters. You had Johnson Products, you had Schaufstein, Independence Bank. We got to find a way to provide jobs for our community, he said. I got sprinkled in this week on the project because of Ed Gardner, said Cheryl Copeland, a union laborer and flagger. Despite being a union member with 19 years' experience, Copeland said between January and July 2012, she had worked only 9 hours. Mr. Gardner made noise and they called me. I'm about to lose all my health benefits. I've got missing teeth and can't even get my teeth fixed, she said. Gardner, who walked the 6-block route despite his advanced age, vowed to come back again on Thursday, if you didn't hear from Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and Evergreen Park Mayor John Sexton, who was stricken by West Nile virus in September. Gardner's crusade began a week ago when he was driving on 95th Street and noticed that no blacks were working the projects to replace the sidewalks adjacent to the strip mall 1 block east of Western. The protest grew from a handful of activists who have long agitated for black construction jobs to a crowd that included people from every walk of life. There's no reason that we cannot have more of our young adults engaged in construction development, given a high rate of unemployment in the city and the state, said State Senator Jacqueline Collins. Tanya Jones, a Chicago public school teacher, said she came out of the rally because enough is enough. I'm tired of the violence, and this is a correlation to the violence, Jones said. That's why my twins and my husband are out here. It's a family reunion. This is so beautiful, said Kublai Touré, executive director of Amer I Can, an organization that works with at-risk youth. If this doesn't make you feel good about yourself and who you are, I don't know what can. This is the first time we've done something like this in 20 years. That's it.
Wow. Caught me off guard right there. Yeah. Where was a success to the degree that I'm hearing that there's some big news that is supposed to be announced Thursday, and then maybe Friday they're trying to do Come Alive October 5. Now, Come Alive October 5 was a campaign that Ed Gardner stated to register blacks to vote during the Harold Washington campaign. So what is the Come Alive October 5 movement is going to be about? Well, some people says that the Come Alive October 5 movement this Friday will be shutting down sites that are not hiring African Americans, pardon me. One of the worst things to be having is dead air when you're on the air radio, when you get stuck with something like, you've been stuck, you got to get all the time frame there, boy. That is just one of the most hottest spots out there. But back to what I was saying earlier, we got African-American unemployment at a high rate here. Now, it's funny that during this Obama administration, a lot of Hispanics are getting jobs, a lot of illegal aliens or migrant workers or some of these citizens, they're getting these jobs. Now, the funny part about it is that most of those people that were out there marching probably are going to go home and call a Mexican to come cut their grass. Not saying I have nothing against Hispanics making their money, but sometimes we got to practice what we preach, you know. Okay, everybody, this is what I always do at this time of the time, at the bottom of the hour. And the Bears are playing Dallas. Boy, I'm down here giving it to y'all. Listen to it on some bootleg radio. Let's go, Bears. Okay. Good night, Dorothy. It's time to go to bed, girl. You know we're on a whole brand new schedule now. All right, here we go. This for you.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Irvin.
Never meant to make you cry. You were the only one I've ever loved in
Can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit man, bop the bop, bop it out of bebop, bop the bop. Yeah, bass man, come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit man, sound good. Yeah, saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3.
It is again 347-838-9825. All right, Bears scored a field goal. Right on, right on. Let's go, Bears. But the point I'm trying to get at is that, well, with the point I'm making over and over and over again is that all this protest, me and my mother argued about it. Not argue about it, a point in discussion, because she was one of the people behind this march, and I made sure I got people to the march myself. She was excited about the energy that was out there. She was excited about the people and how they came together because Ed Gardner called them together. Now, my mother's from the Civil Rights Movement. She got all fired up. Never mind. Hold on. Hold on a second. What you talking about? Oh, my point of the matter is, I lost my train of thought. Let me go ahead and just get my thought back. Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio, 347-838-9825.
Bruh. A little something for the people. Bruh. Thank y'all for listening.
And talk about the victim last night that got popped. And who the best on the block with the crack rock? Play a lot of pocket banger till the track stop. It's in our nature to run into this jackpot. Hoping not to scrape the blow for that rah-rah. But you envision that trip that's living my ties. The anticipation turns to aggravation. So when words of wisdom spoke, you hear blah blah. Cause if that wise guy turns to a wise guy, I pray to God that that guy ain't on a high rise. And if he is, I hope the earth he got 9 lives. See, this the type of life I seen with my eyes. Ghost boys whipping in the ghost fire. On the 9 to 5, but no bow ties. Cause when Jay's on the street, you're solo, no lie. All black attire, shooting with a bow tie.
A time comes when silence is betrayal. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, Men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war.
And watch a nigga kill another nigga. So one dead, one in jail, so soon there'll be no niggas. They scamming for the dough, nigga. I can't trust them, I don't know them. Them yo niggas. I need the sword, they either leave or buy. Cause these niggas don't care if I breathe or die. So put your pride aside and let your wings fly. Don't be a middleman, be the man who supply. The definition of a boss, let it multiply. And if they oppose that, they all can die. Cause if they move fast, that's when them cautions fly. So I'd rather be alive than a homicide. Feel my spirit, see my girl and my mama cry. And all my niggas pouring liquor for the honor. I vow to be the realest without ever saying it. So serious, I ain't kidding, nigga, who you playing with?
Where
are
ranked on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
By any means necessary.
Fucking the same chick your man had last week. Now he's emotional, so now you got beef. Instead of him checking out who the hoe be, next thing you know, he let go free. To the chest. Now we gotta lay another brother down to rest. That wall getting full, cause y'all full of the bull. No more love or lust, cause all they do now is cool. 15 years old, not even in school. But he know mathematics better than you. A community that knows everything about you. But when it goes down, they don't know what to do. What type of sense is that? No clue. So instead of waiting for them, you make the first move. Instead of talk about the victim last night that got popped, or who the best on the block with the crack rock.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, still question the power of our democracy. Tonight is your answer.
Jim Lee's Underground Radio 347-838-9825. About to kick it to Ebony. You gonna go for your phone? Your mic? All right, it's on.
Okay, here we go.
This is also from coming from the Sun-Times, updated today, written by Tim Novak, staff reporter. Jackson Sun sought city tax subsidies last year for beer distributorship. Twice last year, Chicago businessman Yusuf Jackson, the son of Reverend Jaxiel Jackson and brother-in-law of Sandy Jackson, went to City Hall seeking taxpayers' money for a new home for his Budweiser beer distributors west of downtown, records obtained by the Chicago Sun-Times. At first, Jackson asked for $4.2 million city subsidy to form in the form of tax increment financing. That's according to the application submitted to City Hall in March 2011, shortly before Richard Daley left office. On a second application filed in August, 3 months after Rahm Emanuel was sworn in, Jackson slashed the amount of taxpayer money he wanted. This time he needed only $1 million from City Hall to pay for the $5.1 million renovation of the vacant two-story building he owned at 401 North Ogden. So far, Jackson hasn't gotten any money from the city for the projects. His application was never completed or pursued, according to Peter Strazabosko, Deputy Commissioner for the City Department of Housing and Urban Development. Jackson won't comment, first asking that questions be submitted in writing, then declining to answer them. But he still liked the city financial backing, according to Alderman Walter Barnett, who said he's trying. Jackson, whose sister-in-law is a member of the city council, would be asked to vote on any request for a city tax subsidy, has begun construction on the new home for his beer delivery business. But the job site has been hit with picket protesting his use of non-union labor, according to Burnett, whose ward includes the property on Ogden. City Hall is rebuilding the streets, curbs, and sidewalks on the south property, a $2.8 million project that the city officials said was in the works before Jackson bought the building. Jackson then, 28, bought the Budweiser distributorship with older brother Jonathan in 1996. That was 16 years after his father led a national boycott of the nation's largest brewery over its lack of minority-owned beer distributorship. Their purchase price was never made public, but the Jackson got a $6.7 million loan to pay Anheuser-Busch, Budweiser corporate parent, for a warehouse and equipment on Goose Island. Anheuser-Busch spent $10.5 million to build a Northside warehouse and got $2.6 million tax subsidy from City Hall. 7 years later, in the late 2005, Jackson sold the Goose Island property to the William Wrigley Jr. Company for $10.15 million, paying a $400,000 fee in connection with the sale to John Buck Company, the record show. Jackson, whose brother no longer has a stake in the beer distributorship, which operates under the name River North Sales and Service, then moved the business to 1101 Westlake. He paid nearly $1.9 million for the office space, which had a brief role in the public spotlight when it was mentioned during the corruption trial of former Governor Rod Blagojevich. Realtor Sean Conlon developed those offices, selling two floors for $1.36 million in 2004 to a company owned by businessman Kevin Flynn and attorney Brian Hines, a one-time associate of Tony Resco, who later went to prison for influence peddling under Blagojevich. As part of the 2004 sale, Patty Blagojevich, the then governor's real estate broker wife, was paid a $40,000 commission, even though, according to court testimony, she didn't do any work on the deal. Flynn and Hine later sold one of the floors to Jackson for his company's office, and Jackson bought additional space in the building. Jackson Beer Truck parked at the warehouse in Bridgeport. Jackson Company has outgrown the space on Lake Street, according to his filings with the city last year. His beer business booming with the growing popularity of craft beers. Jackson originally was limited to selling only Anheuser-Busch products in a territory bounded by Lake Michigan and Harlem Avenue, Irving Park, and Roosevelt Road. But now he distributes a variety of craft beer as well as the Goose Island brand throughout the six-county metropolitan area. Jackson bought the building on Ogden for $2 million last year from Plaza Bank, which gave the beer distributorship $1.6 million mortgage. Jackson told the city the new home for his beer business would include offices, a marketing center, a bar, a test kitchen, and a small home brewing facility, enabling the creation of in-house craft beer for training purposes.
Now, Ebony, reading that story, what do you find odd about it? It stands out to you. Okay, Lassa, how about this? How about, hey, man, how can you cannot have your office in the African-American community where it can create jobs for African-Americans? See, you can go on the hookups and how we boycotted Anheuser-Busch and they came up with a business. You can go all that, but hold up, homie. Let's see, went through all of that and got the hookup. You can just plugged in. What stops you from having your beer trucks in the South Side of Chicago instead of Bridgeport? Why is your beer trucks in Bridgeport? Why can't no African-American companies get that little rent money that you're paying somebody else? How come you can't have your office in the black community? See, why, yeah, you're giving us beer. We drink your beer. We buy your beer. You have it every Arab in the South Side of Chicago. I mean, you're on Johnny B. You get the Arab money. So how come no blacks can't get that real estate dollars? How come you can't have it in Sandy's Ward over there with all the industrial area that you can help revitalize? See, those are things that that march was all about or should have been about, but it brings up these issues. And now, why are these issues? Now, here's another thing, Ebony, that probably stood out to you. They said the offices play a part in what role? They said the role in Rod Blagojevich. Now, there's a book coming out by Korecki, K-O-R-E-C-K-I, where she said Jesse Jackson Jr. offered to arrange Blagojevich a pardon for Obama. Now, you can check this out in the September 10th, 2012 edition
of the Chicago Sun-Times. And it goes on and says, Rob Blagojevich once promised to bring reform to Illinois politics. The former governor now lives in a federal prison in Colorado, serving out his sentence for political corruption. Sun-Times reporter Natasha Kurusky followed every step of the Blagojevich downfall, and she got a book about it. She details his demise in the new book, Only in Chicago, how the Rob Blagojevich scandal influenced Illinois and brought Barack Obama, Only in Chicago, how the Rob Blagojevich scandal engulfed Illinois, embroiled Barack Obama, Rahm Emanuel, JJJ, and enthralled the whole nation. The book raises the questions of whether JJJ, the congressman's son, and Jackson Jr., the congressman's son of the former civil rights leader, plotted to arrange a pardon for Blagojevich from President Barack Obama. It was fall of 2008, and the higher law enforcement agency in the county headed to the Windy City. Sensitive wiretaps were up at the federal FBI's agents, and they was combing over all the records. What could turn out to be a particular public corruption case, Chicago agents were working lengthy shifts, monitoring bugs, wearing wiretaps, checking all the informants. FBI Director Robert Mueller, that's why you got to be careful, man. Don't do dirty, and watch your homies, because they will get you in. Ain't they right, Q? FBI Director Robert Mueller wanted to hear some of the tech cuts himself. Walking past a pile of papers heaped on the desk of Robert Grant, Chicago FBI special agent in charge of the Near West Side office, Mueller settled down and he asked his bodyguards to leave the room. With only Mueller, Grant, and top FBI supervisors Pete Coolen, let the tapes roll. Mueller, who was overseeing numerous terrorism and corruption cases at the bureau, listened to the conversation for the first time. He stopped and looked up. Who was just dropping all these F-bombs, he asked. That's the governor, he said, only in Chicago. Henceforth, the name of the book. More than an hour after Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald news conference, the Dickerson federal courtroom still teemed with reporters who packed into benches and into empty jury boxes. They looked over the courtroom trying to find a recognizable defense lawyer with which high-priced attorney would handle this one. No one looked familiar. Where was the governor? Reporters whispered to each other he wasn't in the room. Then it's a real moment to many of those who had spent nearly several months covering the trial of George Ryan. A side door of the courtroom leading the prison holding area open. In came a different governor of Illinois. Biting his lower lip, the busy-headed Blagojevich quietly entered the courtroom without a smile, wearing a tracksuit. He looked awkward. In the formal setting of the wood panel room, crowded with dark business suits. Reporters waited for Blagojevich to exit the courthouse, but he was allowed to leave through a security entrance. He was still the governor. He was still a sitting politician, and that came with perks. He had his own security team from the Illinois State Police. In an increasingly violent political climate, officials with the state police were among the few who Blagojevich still trusted. On the day of his arrest, court security deferred to the governor's detail and allowed a backdoor departure from the building. Blagojevich made no public statement. He rode out the courthouse basement in the back seat of a car driven by the state police. A Sun-Times photographer was in the right spot to get the shot of the solemn-faced governor. Blagojevich was sunk in the back seat of the car next to the window. The photo covered the newspaper front page the next day. She wrote that wrong. She covered the whole entire page. But anyway, the next day, the headline read The Shame. Now, why I'm reading about the Blagojevich, because it links him to Jackson, which links into the story. Robert Nyack, he's in jail right now. And his attorney, a former federal prosecutor named Thomas K. McQueen, were meeting with agents in a downtown office. Now, this is happening during the Robert Blagojevich scandal. They got Nyack already. This is before he even got arrested. In that meeting, Nyack told authorities, this is before he got arrested, now dig it. Nyack told authorities a dramatic different story. He said he approached the governor's brother, Robert, at Jesse Jackson Jr.'s direction on October 31st, 2008, with a multi-million-dollar offer for the Senate seat. The story went back to an October 2008 visit to Washington, D.C., where Nyack had gone for a special signing of a U.S.-India Nuclear Corporation Act at the White House. Now, dig it, the man's in jail for stealing from the government, but yet he was allowed to be at the special signing of a U.S.-India Nuclear Corporation Act at the White House. Nyack was a backer of this effort aimed at bringing electricity to rural India. Now, here's a man stealing money from the government to make sure India has electricity. Check this guy out now. He's in jail now. Before heading to the White House, though, he went to Jackson's Washington, D.C. home. Jackson called a limo to pick him up. The two had lunch, according to Nyack. Jackson wanted to go to the Cheesecake Factory. It was at this lunch when Nyack said Jackson started talking about the Senate seat. And the guy went in jail about trying to buy the seat. Dig what I'm saying, Ebony? This is where Jackson started talking about the Senate seat, this is Nyack saying. Nyack described Jackson as aggressive and power hungry. Yeah, the bipolar says that. Talking about how easily he could raise campaign money if he was a U.S. senator. He then made a proposal, according to Nyack. Jackson told Nyack to tell Blagojevich that if he named Jackson to the Senate seat, the Indian community in Chicago would raise $1 million for him, and once Jackson was named to a Senate seat, he would raise another $5 million for Blagojevich. We can't raise that Nyack said he told Jackson it didn't matter. Jackson told Nyack, excuse me, read that again, that came out incorrect. Because I got stuck, I listened to Bears game, caught me. Jackson would, okay, I'll start. The Indian community would raise $1 million for him. And once Jackson was named to the Senate seat, he would raise another $5 million for Blagojevich. We can't raise that, Nyack told Jackson. It doesn't matter, Jackson told Nyack. Tell him that anyway. But there was much more to Jackson's proposal. Jackson told Nyack to tell Blagojevich that the two of them could run on the same ticket in the next election in 2010, and that Jackson would make sure that Reverend James Meeks, who could potentially divide the black vote, didn't challenge Blagojevich for the good gubernatorial race. Jackson also spoke of President Obama, according to Nyack. He told Nyack that he and Obama were close and that Obama would be willing to help Jackson if it came to it. Jackson told Nyack he would leverage his friendship with Obama to get a pardon for Blagojevich, according to Nyack. Jackson limo driver took Nyack directly to the White House, where the congressman and Nyack posed together for a picture in front of the White House gate. Nyack gave a copy of that to the feds, and the picture will be later entered in evidence. Now, all this happened before Nyack went to jail. Now, Nyack is in jail now for misappropriation of funds. Excuse me, for scheming from the government. Medicare fraud. Now, again, either A, Superman Jackson. Sat up and ratted my man out to keep his job because, you know, how he knows that he was, how did the government know that he was dealing and that he was studying with money from the government. Les Simmons Jr. was talking about it. But anyway, he's in jail. Jesse's not in jail. From Nyack's conversation to the feds, he's telling Jesse that he can get a pardon, raise some money, and all of this. So it's a tough day for the Jacksons, you know. So all that is hitting the fan right now. So we'll be back right after this quick commercial break, everybody.
Like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773 484
5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean again.
Hello, this is Prentice L. Allison, founder and president of SPSI, Service Perfect Solutions Incorporated, a network of financial service professionals teaching people how to use life insurance and annuities to retain more of their income and pay the least tax on it. Our toll-free number is 877-902-9048. We are proud to have serviced more than 500 clients, national and international, from ages 0 to 99 for the past 30 years. My tip to you today is, if you are a business owner with at least one employee, including yourself, it would behoove you to get business life insurance. Why? Thank you for asking. 7 points I want to leave with you. Your premiums are tax deductible. Your policy bills cash tax deferred. Your cash reserve inside the policy is yours to use tax-free. The policy will replace your income if death occurred prematurely. The company will pay the premiums if you become disabled. The policy will return all premiums to you when you retire. Last but not least, make sure your agent is well experienced in business life insurance. Stay tuned for more tips on how to use life insurance and annuities to help yourself today and protect your family and business tomorrow. This is Prentice L. Allison, president of SPSI. Toll-free number is 877-902-9048. I wish you well, and to God be the glory.
In this, her first romance novel, State of Ecstasy, Jew Ephraim finds passion on the lush island of Martinique. Reminiscent of the works of Clépas and Lawrence, Jew Ephraim's rich emotional landscape delivers an achingly accessible complexity that makes State of Ecstasy steamy, provocative, and fresh, and its author a forceful new voice who brings an entirely new level of heat to romance. With her soon-to-be-released paranormal novel, Ephraim is giving us a brand new insight into this genre. Find her books on Amazon, iTunes, and wherever books are sold.
Just as I am.
1-888-589-8825, Jimmy's Underground Radio Network. What's going on, Dana? How you doing?
Hey, Jimmy, how are you?
All right. Yeah, so how was your weekend?
It was wonderful, you know. I just kept it busy. Trying to make sure I get everything done that I need to do.
I got you. Well, we had a nice little protest here on the south side of Chicago. My man Ed Gardner called out for 10,000 people. Not 10,000, came up a little bit more than half of that. Less than half of that showed up. And it's funny to see the engaging atmosphere of, hey, I'm not calling it rebelliousness, but people taking charge of their destiny here in the Chi. But the disappointing part to me about the march was a lot of politicians were out there. Now, I know we say Tim, but you see us as politicians and stuff like that. But we are activists, civil rights activists, to be honest with you. And we was out there for the cause. But a lot of politicians that were out there who couldn't stand us while we was in office, you know, was out there, and they were most of the problems. But we was in the Tim's were in administration. We had something called 70-30. We came to African-Americans' neighborhood for contracting. That means 70% on the site had to be African-American, 30% other. You know, if you came into any business, it could be 70-30. But after we got out of office, that plan just got put on the side, and blacks lost a lot of jobs. And some of the same blacks can stand us in an office while out there calling us to come back to help them get jobs because they realized, you know, when we were in office, we did a lot for black businesses, and they thought they was going to get the same thing from the other people. But the funny part about it is that here we have an Obama administration, an Obama economy here with Rahm Emanuel. You got blacks picketing for construction jobs on the streets. You got people who can't get a job in their neighborhood to work on sites that are qualified union workers that can pour the concrete, that can build the car, that are carpenters, that are electricians, that are trying to get money to feed their children, but they're being put out. And they've been put out because the aldermen are not making sure that they're getting their fair share. But that was a good little thing this weekend. And I was meant to go to the Black Caucus with the Chicago Teachers Union Black Caucus and talk to them, but they had they're getting together for their vote tomorrow to vote on their contract, and so I didn't want to deal with that, so I'm trying to have my girl Tara Steps come talk about that and what was the outcome on for this little hour. And next week we should be going 3 hours, Dana, you know. We're doing good for our next year's service and stuff like that. We're doing damn great, better than I imagined that we would be at this time, on my show at this time, you know. I'm really excited, you know, about the next Jimmy Lee, next year, the next 360 days of Jimmy Underground Radio, you know. And we advanced so far, little quirks here, little quirks there. If everybody go back and look at our archive, they hear the quirks. Some of the quirks were our best shows when we had like a tin can and some thread pretending it was a microphone. But I tell you, Dana, your adaptation, your little technical assistant that gave me one little hookup you gave me turned my show around. So that is that. And we're going to, I know you had a lot to say then, but we're going to get right back to you in a second for this commercial break. And so this is Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio Network, 347-838. That's 838-9825. Repeat, that's 347-838-9825.
Does your insurance company work for you? Hi, this is Ken Robinson, President and CEO of Ken Robinson & Associates Limited. We are an insurance brokerage firm located at 5963 West Madison Street, Chicago, Illinois. Our phone number is 773-626-0883. We make the insurance experience easier by shopping for you, saving you time and money. Our agency features the best insurance products, giving you the most competitive prices. We insure needs for less, featuring life, health, annuities, homeowners, auto, SR22, bond cards, business owner's policies, general contractor's liability, and vacant buildings. Now, we also offer coverages most major insurance companies no longer offer. Please call for a free quote at 773-626-0883.
Attention business owners, radio show producers, and internet radio producers. It's time to crank it up for 2012 with quality radio production. Are you a record label needing hot album promos or EPKs for your new artist? Introducing CoolVoiceRadio.com. Does your internet show need a new intro or outro? How about a promo for your upcoming event? Are you a DJ needing a hot voice for your next hot mixtape? Imagine increased sales in your business from an internet radio spot. We've got you covered with broadcast quality radio spot production with the nation's top voiceover talent, featuring talent like John Heath, Kate Clifford, Bill Thomas, and much, much more. Visit us online at www.coolvoiceradio.com. CoolVoiceRadio.com or call 646-326-7800. Remember, nothing beats the right sound.
Jimmy's Underground Radio. Okay, that's you back, Dana. Okay, now, what's been going on, though? I heard that the Navy now are hazing people. I see the Navy got a case against hazing going on. I wanted to hear anything about that. But what were you about to say? I can deal with that later. But what were you about to say, though?
Oh, I was just going to say, as I was listening to the things you were saying earlier, that was another example of irresponsible leadership. You know what I mean? If you're going to represent the people, then the first thing a person needs to be is honest. You know what I'm saying? Integrity goes a long way. I don't know when we left the era of I want to do the right thing just because it's the right thing to do. And as long as we have irresponsible leaders, then you can't, what you breed is a more irresponsible society. And so as we look around us and crime is increasing and drug heads are increasing, and gangs are increasing, and, you know, there's just so much bad going on. All of these contribute to the demise of us, of our society. And focusing on President Obama, especially when it comes to the plight of African Americans, the two don't compare. Because just like he is experiencing this newfound racism, everyone else is just trickling down to the rest of us. You know, and for him, I'm sure it's on a much larger scale. Well, I should almost say that, but I guess now that I've had my experience, I can't. But, you know, so it's just really harming all of us as a whole. It's not just the one. It's the all. And as long as we continue these kinds of behaviors, as long as we continue these immoral acts, as long as we continue these unethical practices, guess what? It's just going to be some more of the same.
I agree with you. It was going to be more of the same because at this little march, yeah, Bobby Rush, the guy's running against, he was there, you know, but he sits on contract. He sits, there's a railroad coming through the ghetto. Amtrak, federal dollars. He can scream, I want black people on the contract, but why can't you make sure that the black people contract get hired? Why, you know, there's processes that you can go through to make sure black people can hire because, you know, it's funny seeing going to the black neighborhoods and you can't see a black man pour concrete on his own front yard or take a hammer and nail and go into the building to help rehab that building. Or take some electrician work and work on the lighting out here. I mean, I'm not a union man, but there are qualified union people out here that jump through the hoops to be part of that union. So if you don't allow them to be part of that union, it only makes sense to give them an opportunity to feed their children. And there's millions, and I mean millions of dollars that get flooded through the state, infrared projects, neighborhood rebuilding projects, street road pavings. And to sit there and say you can't find no African Americans to do that job is just truly asinine and totally embarrassing. You know what I'm saying?
But as long as we live in a society that promotes division, and especially is promoting the division of people based on race or or their position in society, then we're going to always end up with those kinds of things. But just like the chicken is now coming home to roost, it's going to come home to roost for everyone. You know, anytime, if you don't want, if you want African Americans to get hired, then you stop the racist practices that are keeping us out. You see what I'm saying? Anytime somebody can drive down the street with a mannequin of a black man on the noose and they don't get Reginald Denny, there's something wrong with the society. Anytime somebody can be so comfortable that they could put up racist banners and sell racist bumper stickers and think it's okay and have people buy them, there's something wrong with this society. We need to move away from the hatred. I mean, and it's unnecessary. My goodness. You know, all black people have done is be black. It's been born of.
Right.
That was a crime. That was a crime, and we've been persecuted for over 100 years for that very reason. At what point does it end? At what point do people realize that we're all a part of the same thing? We're all human. We're all, especially here, we're Americans. You know, so until that kind of stuff goes away, guess what? We're going to continue with these same problems. But at some point, people get tired. And when they get tired, you got to be careful.
Right.
That's it.
Right. Well, I agree with you on all points you're saying, but what can you do when you elect people and they go to those offices and then you think they're going to do something for you and then they tell you, well, hey, yeah, I know you got me elected, but I got to do something for everybody. I just can't do nothing for y'all. We're in society. It's a Democrat society, majority rules. Just because that means you were majority, not the minority. Because minority would never, ever vote for you again or look out for you and vote for you the first time. You know, you roll with who got you in office. That's how it go. You roll and put you
the
in
thing
there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm still here. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the thing is that, you know, I guess it depends on the person's position within the, as an elected official, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the person is the president of the United States, they represent all of everyone. And that's what they have to do. They got to represent all and represent all well. So even when it comes to people that they disagree with, it's still they're still the representative. And so that's a responsible thing to do. As a member of Congress and a member of Senate, you know, if they can't, they're, I guess, a lower tier of the government system. And so if they are not doing what they're supposed to do for the people, then guess what? They need to go. And that's on all scales. You can't, if a person stands up and gets elected based on the thought that they're going to represent the people, and then when they don't represent them, then they should not be in that position. Because me, as an American citizen, I need somebody that's going to stand up for my rights and is going to be there and promote the things that they say that they're going to promote. Otherwise, it's fraud. You know, and if you have fraudulent practices, guess what? You get fraudulent outcomes.
Yeah,
so,
that is. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say. So
no, go ahead. I'm stopping you. I don't want to stop you. Go ahead. Continue. Finish.
Well, I just think it's time that we expect that the people who are representing us are going to be contributing members to this society. They're not going to be. You know what I'm saying? I shouldn't have Al Capone as my elected official, and I got to worry that he's going to shoot me if I don't follow whatever it is he decides that he wants me to do. It's not right. And so I think that we need to hold elected officials responsible for their position in the government.
Yeah, when you was going through your little thing, and you was talking to your representative, how would you rate their service? Was they surprised you came to see them? How would you rate their service when you went to see your congressional representative?
Well,
to be black.
It's ironic that you asked me that question because I spoke to someone today that represents my congressional, the person who's in charge of my district.
Congressman,
right?
Russ, I'll drop his name.
My elected official. I spoke to someone today that represents his office. And my question was, I said, I have had fraud committed against me. My children are being targeted. I'm being harassed. I've been discriminated against. I've been forced to sit in a segregated environment. I'm experiencing reprisal. Right? I'm being threatened. I'm having fraudulent acts committed against me. I want to meet with my congressional official so that I can show him these over 400 pages of documents that I have in support of my statement. So that when I say it, like R. Kelly said, I'm not going to just talk about it. I'm going to be about it. I'm going to show you what I mean. And he said, he hemmed and hawed. Well, did you call the Congress representative of Virginia? No, I did not. I called my district congressman. Okay, well, why don't you write a letter? I said, I got plenty of letters. I got the letter I sent to Senator McCaskill. I got the letter I sent to Senator Durbin. I got the letter I sent to President Obama. I got the two letters I sent to President Obama. You know what I'm saying? And the list goes on and on and on and on. I said, I got plenty of letters. At what point is the person who's representing me as my elected official going to stand up and do the right thing? So we're supposed to get back with each other. And so I guess we'll go from there.
How long was the meeting?
No, we were on the phone. We were on the phone probably for about 20 minutes.
There wasn't a situation where you could go to his office and meet him in his office? At least a representative?
No, he didn't say come down and meet me in my office. If I was an elected official, that's what I would have said. If I was an elected official, let me tell you something. I believe in going above and beyond. If I was an elected official and somebody that was in my district said they needed help, then guess what? My job is to help you because I am representing you. That's not, I guess I don't feel the warm fuzzies when it comes to some of these elected officials. I don't feel the same pomp and circumstance that gets them elected or causes us to go into those ballot booths and cast our vote when it comes to them representing the same people that they elected them. You know, so I don't know. Honestly, do I think that I'll receive help? I can only hope so. I'm not going to stop telling the truth because I don't want my kids to be placed in a segregated environment. I don't want my kids to be threatened. I don't want my kids to experience more targeting. So I guess I better take that one off the table. I should say my grandkids then, right? Because my kids have already been targeted. So, to me, if these people are going to be elected to represent us, they need to represent us. I don't want to worry about what they're doing under the table. Do you see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Because they're supposed to be above board. What is promotion of a transparent government? You can't be transparent on paper and then hiding up under cloaks and, you know, as soon as the doors close. It's not right.
That's
how I feel about it. But that's my
opinion. How would you rate your representative?
Well, if I had to rate him based on helping me with my situation, he'd have to get a low rating.
I mean, listen, how do you judge your representative? Do you judge him off popularity or you judge him off results?
I judge him off the results. Because popularity, yeah, it gets the crowd around you. Yeah, it makes you look good in the crowd. It makes you seem like you have a bunch of friends. But I want somebody representing me that can handle his business. You see what I'm saying? That's the way I look at it.
Okay.
I may not have a whole bunch of friends at the end of the day. But when it comes to me doing what I need to do, guess what? It's getting done. So that's the kind of person I want representing me, somebody that can handle their business, somebody that can get the job done, somebody that can accomplish the mission.
So when you had your representative before you needed your representative to assist you, what were your opinions of them, of him, prior to you needing actual representation?
Well, okay, so prior to needing something, then of course you're going to believe everything that's said, right? It's like when I look at a commercial on TV and I see these meals and they look so good, and then I see the people walking around in the restaurant that's telling me how good everything tastes, and of course I'm going to believe that because that's all I know. But then,
and we got a caller. And what's who that caller is? Go on, Dana.
And if I get there and things don't, and it's not what is represented, then that's a true measure, right? The true measure is what you do when the chips are down. Like, my sons can count on me to be their mother 100% of the time, if I'm home or if I'm not home. You know, when they piss me off or when they make me happy, I'm going to be that responsible person, because when I signed up to have these boys, I said that that's what I would do. You know what I'm saying? I made up my mind, and I made a pledge to them that I was always going to be a responsible mother. I was always going to be somebody that they would want to grow up and that they could say, I wouldn't say emulate because I'm not a man, but they could say, you know what, if I had to choose the attributes and the qualities that are in someone, I would choose some of the ones that my mother has, or most of the ones that my mother has, or all of the ones my mother has. Because she's got integrity. She's got honesty. She's got compassion. You know what I'm saying? And so all of these things that contribute to who I am, I would like to show them. And so that's what I want my elected official to be. I don't want him to be smoke and mirrors when it's, you know, somebody that can make a good speech, and then when it comes time to pay the piper, he's saying he don't have no money.
But prior to you needing Congressman Rush, what was your overall opinion of Congressman Rush?
I had a very high opinion. Prior to me meeting him, I had a very high opinion of him.
So like I said, and that was strictly off of what? Reputation or rumor, correct? Because actually, like Stevie Wonder said in the song, "Where were you when I needed you, like right now?" You know, like right now. Not yesterday. I got my cat Bianchi calling in. Let me bring him in for a second.
Oh, here we go.
Hey, how you doing there, Brother Bianchi? What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Mr. Jimmy? How's everything?
Everything's all right.
Yeah, I was going to ask Gina something.
Gina, go on ahead.
And you have girls. You have daughters, don't you, Gina?
No, I only have sons.
Oh.
I don't have any daughters.
Well, just pretend you had some daughters. Now, if your school wanted to give them the morning and after pill, what would your reaction be?
You know what, Bianchi? I'm in the medical field, and so I know what choices people have when all choices are taken away. When options are removed, I know what happens, okay? And, you know, of course, I would love, if I had a daughter, I would love for her to come to me and say, "Hey, Mom, I'm having sex." Or, "Hey, Mom, I made you pregnant." Or, "Hey, Mom, I may have done something that was irresponsible." I would love for her to come and say those things to me, but the truth of the matter is they don't. And so when you take away a person's options, what you end up with is some really bad choices and some really bad decisions based on the inability to say what you would like for yourself. So so I'm pro-choice. You know, whatever I decide for me doesn't mean that everybody has to decide for themselves. But I think that we need to have the ability to have an option.
Yeah, but you didn't answer my question. If your 14-year-old daughter, if the school gave your 14-year-old daughter, without your knowing, without your consent, a morning after pill, and you find out that this is probably the 10th time she's done it, what would your reaction be?
But the issue isn't the morning after pill. The issue is the fact that she's having sex irresponsibly. If I thought my 14-year-old daughter was having sex, I would talk to her about getting on the field. I would talk to her about getting some birth control.
Well, the thing is, but that ain't the question I asked. You know, I'm going to tell you something. Now, you saying that the issue is that your daughter's having sex without letting you know. Well, if I put myself in your daughter's position and you had these outside people making it easy for you to have sex without somebody detecting it, I never would tell you.
But the pill doesn't – see, that's the misconception. The misconception is that – you know, and I've had friends who I have told them, maybe you should take your 12-year-old daughter down and get her some birth control. Now, the misconception is that by
where
putting
a person
on the pill, it's going to make them have sex.
But where would you have to take them? Where would you have to take them to get the birth control?
Where would you take them? You take them to the clinic. You take them to their primary care doctor.
So in the clinic, a doctor would write a prescription for them to have birth control, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait a minute, let me finish. So if you're going to take them to get birth control, the attending doctor would write out a prescription, then you would take it to the pharmacist, either inside the clinic, out to a Walgreens someplace, and you would get your birth control. But this other way, the nurse or whoever in the school building would give your daughter these drugs, something that they normally would have to have an RX for, and you wouldn't know anything about it.
But honestly, there are certain conditions where young ladies can receive care without their parents' permission, knowledge, or consent. And one of them is for prenatal care, so they can come to the clinic and say, hey, I'm pregnant. Can you please prescribe me some vitamins, and can I please be seen? And the reason is because we know without the folic acid, guess what, you end up with birth defect like spinal bifida. They can come in and get birth control, and they can come in and receive treatment for STDs. Anything else, they came in for a cold, they need their parents' consent. But there are certain special circumstances that they're allowed to seek care, and that's because we know that parents don't always, you know, they won't always help the child even when the child is asking for help. And so the medical field has agreed to open up some doors to allow these children access.
And they go and receive penicillin, they end up being highly allergic to it and go into a coma or something like that. Who's responsible?
But they're not going to just give penicillin without, I mean, you know, when a person comes in for care, they ask you, do you have any allergies? And no one gives a shot and then just lets you
move. How do a 14-year-old know what they have? And coming out of the school system that we have today, they don't even know what the hell the word allergy means. You may think it's a TV program.
When I talk to teenage patients, I tell them that when you choose the behavior, you're also choosing the responsibility for that behavior, right? And so I encourage them to make good choices. But we know
who's responsible in the other case if they give a child medication and the child had an adverse reaction to it.
You kind of deal with situations as they come up. Anyone can have an adverse reaction to anything, and that doesn't have to be a child. It can be an adult as well.
So they take the position, well, we're going to go ahead and give these kids these drugs, and if they have an adverse reaction, we just deal with that when time comes.
What's the alternative? Let's just look at syphilis, right? Syphilis starts out on the palms of the hands or the soles of the feet. It looks like a sore. A scab. So if I had a syphilis chinker, right? If I had a sore, a lesion on my hand, I would think I scratched myself. I wouldn't think I got syphilis. You got 7 days, right? After 7 days,
I don't know nothing about no syphilis, but I guess you're right.
I'm telling you about syphilis, and syphilis is curable with penicillin, same shot that we're referring to. Now, after 7 days, it goes to stage two. After the next month, it's going to stage three. Guess what?
I thought there was no cure for syphilis.
There is a cure for syphilis, penicillin. They just didn't give it to the black men in the Tuskegee experiment.
I thought syphilis was just treated. I thought that there was no cure for syphilis. You just put it in remission or something, right?
But that remission is treatment. But Al Capone
has syphilis. Treatment, but it's not a cure.
Ain't that syphilis? Hitler has syphilis. You know what I'm saying? So And what happened? It makes you crazy because it can go to your brain and infect your brain. So
yeah, but here's the point, though. As I'm saying before, now you're seeing these school districts trying to take yet another responsibility away from the parents, and at the same time claim that the parents are not participating in the concerns of the children. But I think it's deplorable that this is going on. I think that somebody needs to sue somebody real good and hard in order to deter these type of behavior.
I think the deterrent comes from home by having the talks beforehand. These are all retrospective things, the morning after pill, the prenatal care, the STD treatment, those are all retrospective. Those are after I've had sex already.
Well,
and
I understand
so,
that, but still, that the parents,
approach,
the parents still should be brought into the picture, because suppose that a child takes some of this and forbid it, they become blind or they become partially paralyzed. Now, that's a burden that's going to be thrown on the parents that they've got to take care of this children with this disability, this child with this disability. Whereas the parent may have knew something, pertinent about the child that they would say, no, they cannot take this or they cannot take that.
What if the child, because they're so afraid to tell their parents that they want to have sex, what if they decide to talk to their parents and then they're beat down? You know, they're beat up.
Well, I would rather get beat down than, you know, paralyzed or blind.
Yeah, but you may be blind or paralyzed from the beat down. The truth of the matter is that you know, it's hard to say, gosh, I need to be talking. I've had 15-year-olds. I had to tell them they were pregnant. And you know what they told me? Dang it. Are you going to tell my mother? I said, no, I'm not telling your mother. I'm not allowed to tell your mother. Well, shoot, now you messed up my weekend. I said, weekend? I'm thinking you messed up your life. You see? Because they're going to look at it from a teenage perspective. They're going to look at it. They're going to see the kids' view. Oh, crap. They may take my phone. I mean, I'd be able to go
well,
out and hang out with my friends.
That sounds like a dysfunctional home in some aspects already then. But anyway, I'll let Jimmy go back and take control of his show.
No, man, I enjoy good dialogue and conversation, and I appreciate that because I want to hear the side of a physician and a woman and a mother. But, you know, let me add my perspective on that. Since I do have a daughter, I'd be pissed off if anybody gave my daughter something without my permission. If my daughter, you might be right, Dana. My daughter might be fear of a beat down if she comes to me and said that she didn't wait. You know, like all children are scared to tell their parents that little story. You know, everybody been through that little cycle. So by going through that little fear, I kind of got a little story. I can probably even iron it out. But the fact that out of her ignorance and not trusting me, she could probably damage herself in the future because of that fear. And, you know, that's just, you know, me. Like I said, I ain't no angel. You know, I've been on both sides of the abortion issue. You know what I'm saying? Both sides in my lifetime. It's just when you get older, you tend to see things kind of differently. But I will be angry if my daughter was, let me give you a story. One time, true story, I as a little child, I caught STD. And I went to the doctor. You know, we had good medical. I went to the doctor, got treated, it was all good. You know, got the penicillin tabs, what have you. Now, by the time the penicillin did this treatment, what have you, my mama found out. Not only she was mad, she marched me up to the doctor. We the doctor's office. Now, she's going off on the doctor. Now, the doctor's saying everything you're saying, Danny. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, I'm on the doctor's side. Like, man, damn straight. I don't want you to tell my mama this stuff. Now, I was on the doctor's side. Like, yeah. But not understanding my mother's anger. Being how I don't know my medical history. I don't know what reaction I might have to certain things if those things are new to my system. You know, but we as a as a society must not be scared of our children. Our children must not be scared of our parents. And if you believe in the Willie Lynch letter or not, the philosophies behind separating man and his woman, man and his son, mother and their daughter, brother and their sister, the classic theme show, every TV show you see, is paramount. That's the reason why uninformed daughter can make such a momentous decision in her life, because i.e. ain't got a cell phone, or i.e. My weekend is messed up. You know, the value of life in this world has decreased. We like to talk about death row, or 100 people got killed in the streets, but we won't talk about all the unborn lives that can probably be here to change the world. All the future messiahs that are not coming into it. You know, that's just looking back on the days and people think things and, you know, see the world. But it's as the world has now opened themselves up and said, let me devour your young and your flesh, and the way society puts it into the platform, you're looking at it not as how I'm describing it, but you're looking at it as if a medical procedure that can help you prolong your working career and continue for you to pay taxes to the person and stop you from being a mother, you know. But, you know, not excuse me, Dan, not saying a mother, but, you know, I'm old-fashioned. Sometimes I believe, you know, men work, women do their deal. Sometimes situation happens, but it's just a society that we live in. And now that you got the Supreme, which is funny now, I'm flipping the script now, you got the Supreme Court that might about to strike down this gay marriage suit, which I figured was going to be knocked down anyway, because how, you know, how that will put us in the world view. I'm not saying you know who you are, you do what you want to do, but your sexual desires and sexual nature should not be forced upon anybody, and that kind of gives America a black eye. Even the fact that we're forcing homosexuality amongst all the African continents, anybody taking our foreign aid. It's, you know, we're about to go to the Supreme Court and knock that rule down, and now they're going to say, how now the only sticking point I think now is, how are we going to enforce those states? How can we make those other states recognize other marriages that are deemed illegitimate? Because they're saying now you cannot make a constitutional amendment stating that it's not man and woman, that's not unconstitutional, which is, I found very interesting that the Supreme Court enacted today. I'm going to try to follow that right there. Since we done jumped to family values, let me ask you a question, Beyonce. Are you familiar with the name Ed Gardner?
I've heard of, but, you know, let's get on that one. You say that they say that you cannot make a constitutional amendment. The court can't tell Congress that they can't seek to amend the Constitution. The court is supposed to rule. The court is supposed to rule on lower court decisions and see whether or not they violate the Constitution. It's the U.S. Constitution that permits. Check this out. It's the U.S. Constitution that permits the Supreme Court to exist. So how can the Supreme Court? That'd be like a child giving birth to his mother.
Well, that is. A great way of looking at it, but I know through the Supreme Court, through the intercommerce law, you know, a lot of African Americans got their just due, especially the Board versus Board of Education. You know, sometimes the Supreme Court does work.
Well, yeah, but you can amend the Constitution to read whatever the states come together, 75% of the states come together and agree upon. If they want to say that the marriage between a man and a woman, a female and a male, and that becomes Article Amendment Number 26 or 27, I forget which one, then each state legislature has to vote yea or nay. And once 75% of the 50 states vote yea, then it becomes a amendment to the Constitution, and that's the law. That's what the courts have to go by. The Supreme Court, if somebody say, well, I want to marry Tom, me and Joe, I want to get married. Tom and Joe want to get married. The Supreme Court can only say, well, the Constitution says you can't get married. And that's it.
Well, I think
I
think they're saying now that the states that have recognized it can, they're saying what you're saying, Bianchi, but they're saying that if those states do not recognize it, then you cannot force those states to recognize it because of their state rights also. I think
that's because states have a state constitution. Now, but if you got enough states, if you got 75% of the states, enough, what is it, 37 states come together and say that we have a constitutional convention, 38 states say that, yeah, we agree to this, and they vote in favor of it, and it's ratified, then it's an amendment to the Constitution, and that's the way it is. I mean,
just
think about this. Wouldn't it be nice if we could print our own money, Jimmy?
Once upon a time, we did.
No, wouldn't it be nice if you had a Illinois coin or a Missouri dollar? But the
Before Lincoln was like that. Before Lincoln.
No, the Constitution says that only the federal government. Only the federal government can coin money. States cannot coin money.
But I'm just saying, back in the day, you can get you some Confederate dollars. You know, that wasn't recognized. It was a lot of paper money being floated around there back before Lincoln.
Well,
you know,
Confederate dollars, that's because those states seceded from the Union. They called themselves, they seceded, but they couldn't maintain that secession because they lost the war.
Right. And they had no gold to back the currency, you know. True that also.
Well, we don't have no gold to back the currency now. That's why I come to
back to the gold standard. Let's go back to the gold standard and see how much our money really worth then. Let's go back to that standard right there. You know,
the only reason gold is worth something is because people say it's worth something. Gold, you know, one time Africans traded in cowrie shells. They didn't trade in gold. So what gives it a worth is what people agree upon. It may be Ritz crackers.
Oreo cookies. But you know,
Oreo cookies.
Right, but no, the point that is true. Nixon, you know, since Nixon did gives up the gold standard, it was once upon a time illegal to have gold here in America. Maybe I'm not going to go off his rareness, or maybe that there's not a lot of it, because once upon a time, silver was valued more than gold. They ran out of that also. You know, today, everybody had silver. And then,
yeah.
You know,
but the thing is,
I just think that it's important that we don't create laws that that the gold is to exclude. So, because once you do that, then guess what? And you open yourself up to a situation where you may also be excluded from, that you may experience exclusion. And so that's why I think that as a society, we need to be fair for everyone.
Well, you can't be fair. Well, you got to be a nation of laws. And that's one of the reasons why I come, in order for you to amend the Constitution, it takes 3/4 rather than just a simple majority.
Well, it's funny you say that now, because 3/4 is a new number they're trying to have here in Chicago, in Illinois, where it takes for you to ratify any contract or any pension or any performance, you know, in there, where it's a bust of the union. They say it takes take 3/4 of a majority of anybody to ratify a contract.
Are you talking about the teachers' union?
Not only teachers' union. The
library,
they try to do the libraries. I mean, they try to do all every union in the state of Illinois. They trying to see, well, the law it's on the ballot, and I'm waiting for my.
If they lean on public funds, for instance, like for public finance pension, that stuff is going to have a difficult time. I think they're going to, you're going to see a lot of changes in that, because states cannot afford to pay those.
That's true. See, and sometimes it's not the workers' fault neither. because, you know, the workers put their money into it, you know. They put their money in, they should have put their money in gold. It might have lasted longer, but they put their money into that pension.
And
it was just that the states didn't put their obligation in. That's all.
Okay. I just think when you create laws like that, then you're making a situation where you know that people aren't going to receive assistance. You know, you're going to have a hard time getting 3/4 of anyone to vote. I mean, you go out to dinner and it's 4 people. Hey, you want this? Or I don't care. You want that? I don't care. You know what I mean? You have a hard time getting 3/4 of anything to vote at the same time on the same and take the same stance. And so what's happening is when you have a rule such as that one, then you're creating an inability to get stuff passed and get laws, you know, passed and get things like that, bills in place.
Yeah, but like you said earlier, Dana, you had a hard time meeting with your congressman. And because, like I tell everybody, you want to scare your congressman, go to D.C., walk the halls and watch them look at you like, how did you get down here? How did you find me? You know, people always argue, like even here in Chicago, like I was telling these teachers I was talking to the other day, like you elected all these Democratic state reps and they went down there and voted against you. What's wrong with voting them out? What's wrong with putting the legislation together and put your candidate putting them up and running that person? It's just funny that people don't even go down to Springfield to challenge their state reps or their state senators or even their governors. Like, I'm going back to Trayvon Martin because it's almost a year to that boy's death. And everybody went down there marching. They marched down to the police station instead of marching down to the courthouse or the district attorney's office to demand justice. It's just that we always look at the wrong people to point our fingers at. And when we have all this power and authority, we are on the verge of having 12 years of African-American rulership. Now, people didn't think we would have 4 years. We're about to have 4 more years of Obama, then 4 more years of either Condi Coleman or Michael or Herman. Straight up. We're about to have the next 8 years of African-American rule, and it's just funny that people are still analog and we're straight digital. Or how about this? People are still digital and we high def now. Well, how about this? People still high def, we plasma. Well, how about this now? We 3D, and people still in the past. And like,
yeah, but because of the new technology, what's happening is it is creating, it's causing all these people who want to remain analog to come up out of the woodwork and start practicing analogish practices.
The point I'm striving.
The one thing that the president being elected did was it gave people who had problems with African Americans, it gave them an excuse to come out of the woodwork and begin to practice their racist behavior.
Well, how about this, though?
All over the place.
Well, let's look at it historically. After Bill Clinton got his second term analogy, the only way, after Ronald Reagan won his back-to-back and after he had George Bush, the only way Bill Clinton was able to govern was not far left. He came to the middle. Now, I guarantee you this. After Barack Obama's second term is up and after we get our next black African-American woman president, first woman president, you're going to see the Republican Party go straight to the middle because that you go with the side where America is at. I mean, on that point on. So we can always say that Republicans are racist, this and that, but we'll see. You got Ann Coulter right now. Check out. You got Ann Coulter, by the way, who's dating Jimmy Walker. Ain't that an odd couple? Jimmy Walker and Ann Coulter? Anyway, you got Ann Coulter with a new book out, which I got to get her on, talking about how the Democratic Party and liberal agenda hijacked the civil rights movement. Now, by hijack the civil rights movement, civil rights was for African Americans, not for no rich white women, not for no immigrants who got their own rights, not for no sexual orientation deviant people. It was strictly for a race of people that a country had wrong and was trying to get them an advancement. But right now, everybody screams democratic, it's all inclusive, but none of those people were discriminated against. Now you have Ann Coulter out here screaming what I'm just screaming to you right now. The point I'm saying is, in the next 4 years, watch the turn of the dial. And right now, African Americans are upset. Dana, even you don't want to admit it, even you are upset with the processes that the Democrat, your Democratic congressman took you through the loops. Here you go, you just happen to be in D.C.
He asked you, why don't you go to D.C., see that guy. He's like, hey, I voted for you.
He's like, hey, I voted for you.
You represent me.
Because
you got to go somewhere else.
He told me, unless I want to come up there and have a meeting, because this is the representative of my representative that I talked to.
I'm just saying, but everybody, Dana, is tired of being taken advantage by the Democratic Party. And let's believe me, in 2.5 years, I'm not the only black Republican screaming in the dark. Everybody's going to have enough. And because after Barack Obama gets his second term, he's not beholden to no one. He has not had to answer to the voters. And then in his lack of not doing anything for African Americans, I guarantee you people will be screaming. And that's why the future is red all day long. But I'm going to end it right there.
I feel that President Obama has done for everyone. I don't feel
right.
that he
hey,
has
Dana,
not
Dana,
done
Dana,
for
Dana,
me.
Dana, see, that's the liberal shit again, because sometimes civil rights means African Americans, not everybody. Sometimes, like I'm going to give you an example. If I voted for you, when I come ask you for something, you should be there for me. Don't pass me off. And if you told your congressman that, Dana, hold up, I voted for you. Don't pass me off. So don't give it to everybody. I gotta look up everybody. Hold them. I voted for you. Pay attention to me.
That's
right.
Attention. Obama does.
Right. Okay. And I agree.
Specific to other groups.
Right.
And he's. But I tell you, he's awful callous to me. But I don't know.
Right. He's very hard. He's very hard because as Hispanics, we got their affirmative action. We got their reparations. Ask them. Ask the facts. Ask the women. Ask the minorities. Ask everybody but blacks. Everybody got what they want. He is for everybody, Danny. You're right. He's for everybody. But that's why all these blacks in Chicago protesting that here we are, qualified union workers. We should get some contracts. We should get some jobs. We're starving too. But that's okay.
Wait a minute.
They
still talking about that?
What's happening is that's being used as an excuse and a reason to deny. Because, I'll give you an example. When these people were violating my civil rights, and I shouldn't say were, I should say are, violating my civil rights, do you know who they put as the investigator of my equal opportunity complaint? Do you know who one of the biggest abusers were? African-American men. A black person. Do you know why? Because then they want to hear you say, now scream civil rights violation when we let these black people abuse you.
Right, like you're black elected officials who are sitting in office, and when you ask them, can you help them, what they do? Say, hey, now you got a black president. Scream your civil rights there. This is Jimmy Underground Radio Network. I'll be on tomorrow, everybody.